WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Divine is frequently referred to as a 300-pound transvestite, but Divine thinks of himself as a character actor. Divine has starred in every one of John Waters' movies, usually in the role of a woman. Waters is the filmmaker who elevated bad taste into an art. It was Waters' movie Pink Flamingos that made Divine famous. If you've seen the film or the publicity stills, then you'll remember the image of Divine's huge frame covered in a skin-tight, low-cut gown. Divine played the woman who wins the title The Filthiest Person Alive, so filthy that at the end of the film, the character pops a fresh dog turd in her mouth. But neither Waters nor Divine is interested in that kind of shock value anymore. Divine is trying to broaden his image. He made a couple of movies independent of Waters. He played a male gangster in Trouble in Mind and played Tab Hunter's love interest in the Western spoof Lust in the Dust. Divine gets to play two roles, a man and a woman, in John Waters' new movie Hairspray. It's a comedy set in 1962. Tracy Turnblad is a fat teenager who upstages the reigning teen queen on the local TV dance show. Divine plays Tracy's mom, Edna Turnblad. In this scene, Divine, as Edna, is taking her daughter to Mr. Pinky's hefty hideaway house of fashion for the ample woman to pick out some new clothes for the TV dance show.
Mr. Pinky, I'm Tracy's business manager, Edna Turnblad.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet the both of you. Here we cater to the big bone gals like yourself who are stylish and at the same time frustrated by the lack of sizes in the department stores today. I saw you on TV. I want you to be my model.
Would she be paid for this?
One free outfit a month. You start tomorrow. I hope there's no diets in the works because I want to design your Miss Otto Show coronation gown myself.
Could you throw in a pair of complimentary petty pants in the deal?
You drive a hard bargain, Miss Edna, and rightfully so. Petty pants, panty girdle. You just let Tracy take her pick.
It's a deal. Thank you, Mr. Pinky.
I'm going to make you a star.
Let me ask you to describe in your own words the two roles that you play in Hairspray.
Well, I think one is Edna Turnblad is a loving mother and adoring wife, and vice versa. And she has a child that wants to break into a dance program on television. At first she's a bit leery, but then realizes that, in her words, she could be one of the Rockettes. So she thinks this is great and gets behind her 100% and becomes her agent and manager. Then I also play a part of an Arvin Hodgepile, who is a racist, sexist pig, and he owns a television studio. And he's just a hideous person. So it was great to play, because they're unlike any other characters I've ever done.
Are you glad that you played a dual role, that you played a female and a male role, so that you're seen as a character actor who's capable of performing in both roles?
Yeah, well, I've been screaming to everyone that I'm a character actor for the last 20 years, and finally people are starting to listen, I think. Yeah, it was very important to me, because in the last movie I did, I played a woman in, it was called Lust in the Dust, a Western that I did with Tab Hunter and Lenny Kazan. And the movie before that was a movie I did with Alan Rudolph, where I played a gangster named Hilly Blue. So I thought it was time for me to do a movie where I played both together. And we approached John, my manager and agent, Di, about playing, when I read the script, the part of Arvin Hodgepile. And John said, well, sure, why not? And he said, you'd be perfect for the role. He actually hadn't thought about me in the role, but then when it was suggested, he thought it would be good. And he actually sat down and wrote some extra dialogue and put some extra scenes in for me. So, like I said, it ended up to be a great dual role.
Do you think that audiences and directors as well have gotten the wrong idea of you over the years because you've played so many female roles?
Oh, definitely. I think it's the cliche Hollywood story of being typecast, and I'm definitely a victim of that. But I think I'm very lucky that I'm starting to come out of it. It's taken 20-some years. Like I said, I'm screaming at people, I'm not a transvestite, I'm not a drag queen, I'm a character actor. I never set out in the beginning of my career just to play female roles. But fortunately, or unfortunately for me, they were the only things that were offered to me. They were written for me, which is unbelievable to have that done. And they were the leads of the movies. So you don't go around turning down parts that are the leads or that are written for you if you're a young actor. I had no idea, though, that they would be such strong characters that people thought that was all I could do. But it just seems to be what happened. I mean, and also people thought I only worked with John Waters. So it's taken a long time, but I have said enough on television and in interviews that I wanted to play more men's parts. So I think people finally started to listen. They're fun. They're great, and they're what I would like to do a whole lot more of.
Let's talk about your roles in Hairspray. You really make a very sympathetic, beleaguered housewife. You know, really, you play the role with such empathy for the part. Did you know a lot of women like that? Women who were too busy to do anything because there was still ironing to do.
Oh, I didn't know them personally. My mother certainly wasn't like that. I mean, if there was a party, the ironing would have to wait. But not that she wasn't a good mother and a good wife, but she's a good time girl, too. But and there are women out there. I would see them, friends, mothers, and in different situations. So sure, they're out there, a lot of them.
A part of the movie is about hairdos, about the great teased bouffant hairdos of the early 60s. And I know John Waters is really enamored with those old hairdos. You used to be a hairdresser, didn't you?
Well, for a very short time. I'm glad I had that experience. It's come in very helpful now. Because when I'm on the road and things during my club act, there aren't always hairdressers available or things. So I end up having to do it myself. And I said, I'm glad I know how to tease, because that's definitely the look they want. But I said to John, he doesn't have to go too far from his front door, actually, to still see women that look just like that. When I was doing the film, it was very funny, because the first day on the set, I walked down the street. No one looked at me twice. I walked right through the camera crew, past John, and kept going, and none of them looked at me. I came back and stood right in front of John. He looked at me, and he did a double take. It was very funny. He said, I can't believe that's perfect. So I looked just like one of the girls on the street.
How did that make you feel?
Oh, it was good. I mean, that was the best compliment. I mean, I did fit right in. I did look exactly the way I was supposed to. And because so often with my size and things, I'm so, not uptight, but about sticking out too much.
Self-conscious?
Yeah, self-conscious. Yeah, about sticking out too much and being the largest person on the set. But then in a way, that's the best thing to do, I guess. You'd noticed more.
Actor Divine is my guest, and he stars in John Waters' new movie, Hairspray. Let's talk about the male part that you played, and this is a kind of bad guy type part, a kind of villain part. He's the head of the TV studio who, you know, doesn't want to stand for integration. Now, John Waters told me you got fitted for new teeth for this role?
Yeah, well, they wanted me to look completely different, which is the great part of being a character actor, to look like the characters and to look different from yourself. That's why I said I never cared about looking always glamorous as a woman, which I always thought set me aside from being a drag queen or whatever, because I certainly looked anything but glamorous as Edna, with the long, stringy, oily hair. So in the same way, when they fitted me for teeth, big bucked teeth that had decay and things on them. Then I had brown, because I have blue eyes. They poked me in the eye every morning for about 15 times trying to get these brown contacts in my eyes. And then I wore a toupee, which is the kind of hairstyle that men that are balding and they sweep it up from the bottom and over the top, mm-hmm. which really doesn't cover anything up, but they think it does in their own mind. And you can see the skin in between the hair, you know. A real dark brown, because they usually dye their hair. So it was quite hideous, with a little blue cord suit or whatever and suspenders.
It's great you had to put on as much makeup to do this male part as you did to do the female part.
No, it was more. It took longer. I used to pray to be Edna again. And there were a couple of days when I had to be both, and I was running around with Edna's wig on and great big teeth sticking out of my mouth. I'd say, wait a minute, give us those teeth. Because after a while, you jump out of one into the other so fast, you forget to take half the costume off.
You know, it's funny, whenever you play the man, it seems to be the heavy that you're playing. Even in John Waters' film Female Trouble, in which you play a man and a woman, the man's, a real kind of tough guy, bad guy type. In Trouble in Mind, you played a gangster.
Yeah, I think I'm stuck with playing just hideous people, you know, except for like Edna. She was like I said, sweet, kind.
Seeing Trouble in Mind was really a revelation for me. Before that, I'd only seen you playing female parts, and you played a gangster in the movie, and it showed such a different side of your acting. And it was a great performance.
Thank you.
How did you get that role?
At the time, Alan Rudolph had a movie playing in New York called Choose Me. That was quite a big hit. And his office called my manager's office and said he wanted to have a meeting with me and with my manager. And was I available to do a film with him? He had written a new movie called Trouble in Mind, and he had written a part in it for me. So we said, well, sure, and we all got together. And he said, now here's the script, and if you want it, it's yours. And it's starring Chris Christopherson, Keith Carradine, Jean-Vive Bugeaud, Laurie Singer, and you. I thought, oh, yeah, sure, Chris Christopherson. I'm going to be in a movie with Chris Christopherson. I'm not Barbara Streisand. You know? So, sure enough, I would have done it for nothing, but my agent smacked me in the mouth and said, shut up. So you don't do anything for nothing. So we signed, and I went, and I still didn't believe it, actually. I thought they'd be Chris Christopherson look-alike, you know. But sure enough, there he was sitting on the set, and I thought, oh, my God. You know, and then I looked around. There was Jean-Vive Bugeaud. So, I mean, they kept me busy and working. That was great because when I got killed in the movie, I got killed by the lead, who was Chris. Because I said to Alan, only Chris can kill me. So he said, no, exactly. And Keith Carradine, who's wonderful and really a nice guy, and which is what Chris told me the last day of shooting. He said, you know, you're all right. You're one of the guys, because when I heard you were coming on the set, I didn't know what to think, you know, because his daughter had told him, listen to me, I've got gender confusion too, told him all about me in the other films. So he didn't know what to, he said I was going to come in a spangled dress and a big sequin, you know, hat and wig. And so he didn't know what to think. But we all got along really well. I've been really lucky in all the films that I've done that the cast has gotten along really well. There have been no prima donnas or anything.
You know, you got started acting working with John Waters, and basically I think you were both still in school when you started. You were working with, what, Super 8 film?
Oh, yeah.
Shooting on the streets of Baltimore. It's not like you had come out of Yale School of Drama or something like that. You had this, like great theatrical background that you're going to draw on for your character roles. Did you ever decide once you really got into acting that you wanted to go to acting school? Did you ever feel like you needed that or that would help you in any way?
Well, sure, I thought about all of those things, but whenever I did talk to anyone about it, they said, "No, you have a natural talent. You have a natural ability to make people laugh. You have wonderful comic timing." And I sound like I'm sitting here blowing my own horn, but these are things that they told me. And I went to some very reputable acting coaches and people, and they didn't want to take me on. And they said, if something works, you know, don't fix it. Just go with it. And you just got to have the confidence and things to believe in yourself and to keep doing it, and you'll do it. So that's what I've done.
Well, I want to talk with you more about your acting career, but first we're going to take a short break. My guest is actor Divine, who stars in both a male and female role in John Waters' new movie, Hairspray. We're going to take a short break, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Actor Divine is my guest. Did you love movies when you were growing up? What were some of your favorite films?
Oh, I've always had a very macho taste in movies. my favorites then when I was a kid were those Knights of the Round Table movies and war movies. And,
really?
Yeah. I still like a good war movie. I mean, Platoon and all those movies I loved. And I really do like Rambo movies and Sylvester Stallone. And Charles Bronson, I think, is probably my favorite.
So you probably really enjoy playing heavies when you get the chance to do that.
Yeah. I'd like to play in some of those movies, you know, where they kill 150 people in the first 2 minutes of film. It really does relieve, you know, any frustrations you might have, I think.
Well, you know, it's funny, in the movie where you do get killed in the Alan Rudolph movie, Trouble in Mind, you get killed in this house that is full of art objects. I think it was actually shot in a museum.
Yeah, it was shot in the Seattle Museum of Art.
Yeah, so not only do you get off, but all these, like, sculptures get blown up.
Oh, yeah, they said, okay, knock that vase over. It was $500,000. No, it was about $50,000, this glass piece. I thought, oh, all right, so you just have to do it in one take. And I thought, well, this is fun, you know, going around breaking these $50,000 objects. But the artist had given them to him just to break. They were pieces that he thought were inferior.
That's great. So you liked really war movies and action films. Did you like glamour movies when you were growing up?
Well, anything that Elizabeth Taylor was in, I liked.
Did you like her better when she was thin or heavy?
It didn't matter to me.
Uh-huh.
Didn't matter. I thought it was just more of her to look at when she got heavy. But still very beautiful. And I finally did meet her one day, and I couldn't speak at all after years of planning what I was going to say to her. I was, blah, 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 blah. So I don't drink, but I went and had a double scotch and came back and had a little conversation with her.
Did she know you?
She knew of me. It was a party for her daughter, Maria, and her hairdresser and makeup man, a man, were people that I've used. And they had told her all about me, so she wanted to meet me at the party.
That's great that you'd use the same makeup man.
Yeah. We look a lot alike.
You know, John Waters has said that he really has always loved it when people who don't fit mainstream good looks take what they have and really turn it into style, turn it into, you know, an advantage. Did you feel like you were doing that when you were growing up? Because you were, I think you were always pretty heavy.
Yeah, well, no, actually not, because I was very much an introvert, and I never really went out of the house till I was about 16 years old. I was very uptight about my weight and about the way I looked, and always wanted to look like everyone else. And finally, my junior year, like when I was 16 and in high school, is when I really started hanging out with John and everyone else, that I got the confidence together to go out. And I was always in a coat. I always had a raincoat on or something. People probably thought I was a flasher, but I was just uptight about, you know, how fat I was. But at the same time, wouldn't do anything about it. Finally, I went on a diet, like I said, my junior year, and lost to 80 pounds and went down to 140, 145, and for my senior year. And then I was able to get dates and go to the prom and everything. But still, it was strange to me, because all of a sudden people talked to me. They wouldn't talk to me when I was fat. And I thought, well, what's this all about? You know, it was a rude awakening, actually, at a very young age.
So it must have been really liberating in a way when you started playing these extravagant roles where your weight was really a part of the role, and you were very theatrical about your size and theatrical about the way you dressed.
Oh, yeah, well, John did help me, I mean, to gain a lot of self-confidence and to be proud and not to fit the mold that I think they really do try to put you on, especially here in America, that you've got to be thin, you've got to be, you know, under 200 pounds. And, I mean, you don't. I mean, there are a lot of big people out there that are still very beautiful people, you know. As long as you're clean and neat, this is fine, you know.
I think when you and Waters started working together, you had a lot of exploits, both in the kinds of movies that you did and in the kind of parties that you gave, and shoplifting, from what I've read. But it seems to me like you were part of this, very kind of avant-garde theatrical type of into a theatrical kind of juvenile delinquency, as opposed to being like the real hoods.
Oh, yeah, we weren't really bad, you know. I think we were just bored, and we were young teenagers from your upper-middle-class families with nothing to do. I mean, I think the movies actually grew out of that situation also.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were making movies, we were locking each other in the trunks of our convertible cars and letting our friends out at the drive-in movies, and we'd drink a beer every now and then, which was I guess could be one of the worst things we ever did. We were never into any heavy drug scenes or into anything really, like I said, really bad that we would have to go to jail for, except a few bits of shoplifting. But I mean, all the kids did it, and so it was, I guess, a bit of peer pressure there about that, you know. But that was curbed too. I mean, it wasn't an everyday occurrence, and basically, we were good kids.
How did the tough guys in the school treat you, the people who really were the hoods?
Oh, well, I wasn't. They used to wait for me every day to beat me up after school. And I mean, to the point where I was quite black and blue and afraid to say anything because they had threatened my life. And it was very bad. And finally, one day, I had to go for a physical to the doctor. And when I disrobed, I mean, it was quite obvious that something terrible was happening to me. And finally, I broke down after a lot of questioning and told him what the problem was. And they called my parents, and when they saw what I looked like, they were quite hysterical. And we had the police at the school, and the kids were expelled. And it was quite an ugly situation, which made me even more unpopular with their friends and the other people, you know. But so I had to go through like I said, the next 2 years of school with that stigma attached to me. But then I think finally, like I said, in my senior year, it was more or less all right. It wasn't so bad. But up until then, it was quite hideous, and I really hated school, and I hated the whole situation.
Have you ever gotten the chance to see any of those guys who beat you up since you've become a famous actor?
I have. I've seen them in theaters, and I've played.
Have you really?
Yeah, and different situations, and I don't think they actually knew who I was.
Oh, that's too bad. You.
I knew that I had, in a way, had the last laugh. It did make me feel good, because I'm never the type of person to seek revenge and things, but they said they did really mess my mind up for a while, and my teenage years, you know, which were supposed to be the best years of your life.
You said that it was John Waters who gave, you know, who helped give you your image.
Right.
How did you decide on what that image was going to be when you first were getting
it together? Well, at the time, there were Andy Warhol, and a lot of people were making cult movies, and as they called them, underground films then, which were just the equivalent of your independently made movies today, low budget. And so the one name, like Viva, was very popular, so John gave me the name Divine. He just said he thought I was, and it was that I was funny and that I was divine, and it was a good name for me. And also because of a very heavy Catholic upbringing, we had sort of religious names. So I don't know. Of course, the names became more popular again today with Madonna and Cher and Prince and Princess and all of these people. But did I go off the subject?
No. And then when you were getting like this... Well, excuse me?
I couldn't remember what the question was.
About forming the image when...
Yeah, so the thing with John wanted a very large woman because, as you had said before, he wanted the exact opposite of what normally would be beautiful. He wanted a 300-pound beauty as opposed to a 110-pound beauty. He wanted, as I've been called, inflated Jane Mansfield. that's what he got. And also, it's ironic that he would say the most beautiful woman in the world turns out to be a man. So everything there is backwards. So it's really a John Waters character. But then Van Smith, a very good friend of ours, who does all of John's movies, he does the makeup and costuming, and has done off, helped create the look for the character. He's the one that said, go in the bathroom, shave your head halfway back, and pluck all your eyebrows out. So, I mean, you really got to trust people. I went in the bathroom and did this. Came out, and I thought, what have I done now? But then he did my face almost like he always called a beauty gone berserk. And it was similar to kabuki-type makeup.
Oh, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, the work that he does is quite beautiful. And also, we didn't want to look like a normal, everyday woman, because I'm not a woman. We wanted to look more like a cartoon character, you know, of a woman.
Had you dressed in drag before doing it for movies?
No, I think a couple times on Halloween or something. You know, I was Martha Washington once. I remember.
I'm just going to ask you one question about the famous Pink Flamingos scene in which the movie ends, and just one question about it, and then you have to eat a fresh dog turd, and you and John Waters have both said that you did it to kind of get attention, and the film really did. I mean, you were real upcoming people.
Well, John came to me and he said, well, you know, would you do this? I said, oh, sure. I thought I was kidding. And a year later, he said, okay, now tomorrow you have to eat the dog turd. I thought, oh, this is great. He wasn't kidding, you know. And he said, well, listen, do you want to be famous or do you want to be completely forgotten about? He said, it's going to do either one or the other for you. It's going to make you or forget you. Your name will go down in movie history forever anyway, no matter what you do. And I thought, well, what do I care? You know, I was very young, and you don't think about all these things. And I didn't really think about it until I had to follow that dog around for 3 hours. And finally it went, and it was quite a hideous experience, actually.
Well, here's my question. Did you rush off to an emergency room afterwards?
Well, no, I went home.
That's a silly question, but I'd be wondering about, you know, germs and things like
that. Well, I had mouthwash and things, and I brushed my teeth and goggled. Anyway, I went home, and I was sitting there. And the more I thought about it, then I started to worry. So I called the hospital, and I'll never forget this. And I didn't know what to tell them, you know, because I was a bit old running around eating dog feces, you know. So I called and I said, oh, hello, this is Mrs. Johnson and my son just ate dog duty, and what should I do? And she said, well, how old is your son? And I said, well, he's, you know, 24 years old. And well, then the nurse got, she said, some maniac's on the phone here. Her son's 24 and he's eating dogs. So, I got back on the phone. She said, well, why? And I had to tell her, well, I said that he was retarded and that we had a dog and he was in the backyard playing with the dog. The dog had gone to the bathroom and he'd eaten the dog mess, you know. So she said, well, you just have to wash his mouth out and, you know, do all this. She said, but feel his stomach every day because he could get what was called the, you know, like a worm, a white worm. And every day I was feeling my stomach to see if it finally one day it got hard. And I thought, oh, my God, I've got it. But I had hysterical white worms as it was. I didn't have anything. So I was very lucky. But she suggested that I get rid of the dog.
Well, I know John Waters wants to do a sequel. You wouldn't go through that again for a sequel, would you?
No. I said, do I have to stand under an elephant the next time? Forget it. I said, I had to draw the line somewhere. So I said that was my last experience with animals, please.
Devon, you have a second career doing a club act and making records. This is in addition to the movie career that you have. Can you very briefly, because we're just about out of time, describe your club act?
Oh, well, I dress as a female character, who we've given the name Divine to, which is also my name. But she's very much like a lot of the characters that I've played on the screen. She's very on top of it, very bitchy, loudmouth, vulgar. Talks vulgar, which is what you would expect in a nightclub act, I think. And I sing all my songs that have been, I've had some very big hits in Europe, which have been platinum and gold, and I do those. I do two medleys, and it's been a show that I've done for about 5 years. I change it every now and then, put new material in, and as I do new records, I put them in. I have a new record right now that's 26 on the top 40 charts in London. So I've been very lucky that all my songs have charted, especially in England. And they're very popular, like I said, all over Europe and the rest of the world.
Now that you want to break into doing more male roles, do you want to give up doing the drag show?
No, I think as long as there's an audience for that, I'll always do it. I just think, like I said, I'm a character actor, and they're just all different characters to add to my repertoire. So I would just, I'll keep doing them.
We can hear some of your new record in a second. Divine, I want to thank you very much for your time. Thanks
okay, well, that record will be available here in the States soon, so I want everybody to go out and buy it.
Well, my guest has been actor Divine, and his new film, Hairspray, opens this Friday. Divine's new record, Hey You, will be released in the United States in a few weeks. And Divine will also appear soon in the Fox Network's TV show, Married with Children. And you're going to play what? The brother of the husband?
Yeah.
Okay, looking forward to seeing that.
Thanks
a lot. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.